Senator Johnson, can we get you on the COVID cover-up? So why do you think legacy media such as CNN is not covering this?
Why aren't you covering this?
I want to ask you about Iran, the war in Iran.
You know, you really ought to cover the fact that Peter Marks knew on March 1st of 2021 that their algorithms were hiding safety signals. On 26 days later, found out 25 serious adverse events like sudden cardiac death, pulmonary infarction, Bell's palsy, different types of strokes, and they buried it. They hid it. It's a major scandal. It's even as big a scandal that the major media is completely ignoring the story. It's been out now for almost 6 weeks.
Before the COVID pandemic, Dr. Fauci, as head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, provided millions in U.S. taxpayer dollars to fund dangerous gain-of-function research on bat coronaviruses at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, work which is now widely viewed as the source of the unintentional lab leak that sparked the pandemic.
What they thought was going to happen during Biden and Kamala, that they would take out a lot of my generation and older, clear the deck, turned out the bioweapon wasn't fully tunable. And guess what happened?
We took out the wrong demographic.
They took you out. Before COVID begins in 2019, we get this guy from Harvard University arrested at the airport, caught with 21 vials of nanobat technology. His name's Charles Lieber. Two guys from China who worked in Wuhan gets arrested with him. They take the 21 vials away. He's the expert in wideband technology. That was what they were going to use to tune the bioweapon to take us out. They had to redeploy and put that stuff in Ukraine because they had to protect China from stealing this technology. Who wasn't ready? Pfizer. So what does Pfizer decide to do? They go downstairs three floors to their genetic department and they find SV40. They use SV40 to design their jab because they're late to the game. And what do they then do? They tell their scientists to use a molecular tool to take the evidence of SV40 out, and then they present a clean version to the FDA and they get approved.
CDC awarded Pfizer $735 million plus dollars for infant COVID shots, paying them, and the government tried to say it was mandatory when it wasn't, to then poison babies with it. This is the pure evil, the kind of stuff they've been trying to suppress the public from knowing. Then they also paid the federal government over $2 billion to major pharmacies, most of it went to CVS and Walgreens, to not prescribe ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, even though the elites were all taking it, and it was proven to be very effective.
How many thousands, tens, hundreds of thousands of people are permanently disabled or possibly lost their life because our FDA hid the fact that there were safety signals screaming at them with the COVID injection?
I gotta tell you, Maha should be in an outrage. This was a massive issue on the campaign. It's still a massive issue. Many parents do not want their children to ever receive a COVID vaccine shot. Why? Kids don't need it.
Good job, MTG. Now, here I am in 2009, 2010, and 2011, exposing UN documents, WF planning, Operation Lockstep, CIA, John Hopkins. People ask how to know about lockdown, 6 feet apart, masking. They admitted it was about training you to be a slave, to be locked in your house. Once cell phones got up to a point they could track and control you, which they had way before COVID, they were going to implement this as the new slave control grid. That's how I knew.
Rockefeller study envisions future dictatorship controlled by elite, millions being killed, mandatory quarantines, checkpoints, the end of the family, everything that's in the other documents. But this dovetails with all the other Rockefeller Foundation documents about the GMO food to sterilize you and the forced vaccines and the hell we're already living in. This is going to continue to intensify until we take our governments back from these eugenics madmen. These people are so arrogant that they write policy papers, so many of them, that they're producing these policy papers and reports and white papers so fast that you could never read them all. It is an open conspiracy against you and your family. The only chance we've got of beating this scientific dictatorship, this creeping death that takes its time to incrementally enslave you, mentally, psychologically, physically, spiritually, the only way to defeat it is for the rank and file of this planet to realize that you have a choice to make on what your destiny is going to be. Once you face this information, once you've consciously admitted it to yourself, it will take over your life. It should take over your life.
Let me announce the kickoff of the summer sale. This is going to run for 2 weeks, and different items for only 3 days will be buy one, get one free. Right now, it's Ultra Methylene Blue, the very best methylene blue. You've heard about methylene blue. Ours is medical grade. Buy one, get one free. Another big deal on Tri-Iodine, the best, cleanest iodine. Take action now. The start of summer sale kickoff is now live. And look at this. Nice black hat, high quality, with a nice leather patch, made in the USA. Just classy. And that's from Dickie. Really proud of that. And look at this bad boy. I designed this bad boy, or the concept. 1776 Redneck Deluxe. And that is good stuff with the two crossed musket rifles. That is a good-looking, good old boy right there. And it funds the Second American Revolution worldwide. Get it all now at thealexjonesstore.com and stick your finger right in New World Order's all CNI and say, screw you, globalists. We're keeping Alex Jones on the air.
You are listening to an AJN Live Frontline Report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Our conversation is with Mr. Yuri Alexandrovich Bezmianov. He was the son of a high-ranking Soviet Army officer. He had an outstanding career with the press agency of the Soviet Union. It turns out that this is also a front for the KGB. He escaped to the West in 1970 after becoming totally disgusted with the Soviet system, and he did this at great risk to his life. He certainly is one of the world's outstanding experts on the subject of Soviet propaganda and disinformation and active measures. When the Soviets use the phrase ideological subversion, what do they mean?
Ideological subversion or active measures, активные мероприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interests of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It's a great brainwashing process, and it's divided in four basic stages. The first one being demoralization. A person who was demoralized is unable to assess true information. The facts tell nothing to him.
Do you believe then that men can become pregnant and have abortions?
Yes.
What has this world come to? It's come to a world where drag kids actually exist.
And people do ketamine on a couch.
The next stage is destabilization. Economy.
There are some dire predictions on where the world economy is going.
Foreign relations.
Some of the world's superpowers could be on a collision course.
Defense systems.
The U.S. Army is cutting back its expectations due to, quote, unprecedented recruitment challenges.
The next stage, of course, is crisis.
Folks, we're in a crisis.
After crisis, you have so-called the period of normalization.
When we say getting back to normal, we mean something very different from what we're going through right now.
The demoralization process is basically completed already. I could never believe it when I landed in this part of the world that the process will go that fast. This is exactly what the KGB and Marxist-Leninist propaganda wants from Americans, to distract their opinion and attention from real issues of the United States, to have a bunch of duped Americans, then Americans who are healthy, physically fit, and alert to the reality.
What is your ideal political or social structure?
Communist utopia.
That's why my KGB instructors specifically made the point, try to get into filthy rich movie makers, intellectuals, cynical, egocentric people who can look into your eyes with angelic expression and tell you a lie. These are the people who KGB wanted very much to recruit. It's all these professors and all these beautiful civil rights defenders. They are instrumental in the process of subversion only to destabilize the nation. When their job is completed, they think that they will come to power. That will never happen, of course. The psychological shock when they will see in future what the beautiful society of equality and social justice means in practice, obviously they will join the links of dissenters. The Marxist-Leninist regime does not tolerate these people. In future, these people will be simply squashed like cockroaches. Nobody is going to pay them nothing for their beautiful, noble ideas of equality. The United States is in the state of war. The initiator of this war is the world communist system.
The only solution is communist revolution.
That's right, we need communists. That's what we need.
This is it. This is the last country of freedom and possibility.
Okay, so what do we do? What is your recommendation to the American people?
The immediate thing that comes to my mind is, of course, there must be a very strong national effort to educate people in the spirit of real patriotism, number one. Number two, to explain them the real danger of socialist, communist, whatever, welfare state, big brother government. If people will fail to grasp the impending danger, nothing ever can help United States. You may kiss goodbye to your freedom, including your precious lives. I know Americans don't like to listen to things which are unpleasant. I tried to get the message across. To my horror, nobody wanted even to listen, least of all to believe what I had to say. The time bomb is ticking. With every second, the disaster is coming closer and closer. Unlike myself, you will have nowhere to defect to. United States, wake up.
Hi, folks. Doc Bigley here. And today we're going to get to know our H2O. Billy, what kind of water do you drink?
Why, tap water, of course. Ma says it keeps my teeth sparkly white.
I'm sorry to say it, Billy, but your mother is either plain ignorant or worse, a communist. Let me explain.
Tap water used to be safe to drink, but communist subversives in our government introduced fluoride into our nation's tap under the guise of dental health, when in reality, fluoride lowers your IQ, calcifies your pineal gland, and makes you susceptible to anti-capitalist mind viruses.
So you're telling me I'm a sap if I drink tap?
Yes, you are, Billy. Yes, you are.
But don't despair. We've found a solution. Follow me. I'd like to tell you a tale of two frogs. Frog number one has only ever drank unfiltered tap water, chock full of fluoride. Observe him listening to satanic music, abusing substances, and engaging in other perversions.
Look, Doc, they're trying to play leapfrog. They're pretty bad at it, though.
Avert your eyes, Billy. Let's continue.
Meanwhile, frog number two has only ever drank water that has been filtered for fluoride and other impurities. What a happy frog family.
Spill the secret, Doc. How do you get rid of the communist poisons?
With the new water filter system from the alexjonesstore.com.
Say, Doc, may I have a glass?
Why, certainly. Well, that's just swell. No water in the water filter. Listen, I'm not mad at the crew, but I asked for real water in here 30 minutes ago and never got it.
Crew's in trouble again.
All right, everybody, welcome back. This is Tiffany Cianci for the Alex Jones Network, where I am very unexpectedly filling in for Harrison today for the last hour of this show. Thank you guys so much for joining me. And if you are not familiar with who I am Tiffany Cianci on TikTok and YouTube. I am the Vino Mom on X and Instagram. And I make a lot of appearances on this show where you all refer to me as the bubbly little fairy of doom. Today, I was joining Harrison to talk about a few really important issues, and today, instead, I get to talk to you guys. So thanks so much for having me on. We're going to start today with a video about an issue that I'm really passionate about in the Maha community, but an issue that's unifying people from both sides of the aisle, and it's called the Save Our Bacon Act, which sounds lovely because we want to save bacon. The problem is bacon doesn't need to be saved. It needs to be saved from the monopolists that wrote this bill. So we're going to start with video number one, which is from Joe Redden, the older millennial, who has been talking about this issue a lot online. And then we're going to talk about it here. I think.
So have you guys heard about like the Save Our Bacon Act, right? And the Farm Bill? Seen some videos talking about it, but honestly, I hadn't dug into it. And I had somebody reach out and actually explain it to me. And it is really, really bad. The Save Our Bacon Act, right? This actually passed the House already as part of the
So, my congresswoman did an awesome thing. My congresswoman being Anna Paulina Luna. God, she's so hot. Anyway, so the Luna Amendment passed in the House, which stripped the pesticide liability shield from the Farm Bill, meaning that when a pesticide company gives you cancer, you can sue them. And I gotta say, this is proof that organizing, talking to your congresspeople can actually have an effect. Now, sadly, the second amendment that Representative Luna tried to pass did. This was where she tried to remove the Save Our Bacon Act from the same House bill. Now, the sad thing is, this is kind of on us, right? Because we levied a great amount of pressure on our congresspeople to get that pesticide protection out. But we didn't have the same energy for the Save Our Bacon Act. And because we didn't do that, Congress didn't feel the need to act. Now, the bill heads to the Senate Agricultural Committee. And even though the chairman said he didn't want the Save Our Bacon Act in his draft, because the House passed it, he's going to leave it in. Now, a lot of you probably have no idea what the Save Our Bacon Act is, but simply put, it is a federal takeover of state agriculture. It basically bars any state or local government from passing any regulation regarding agriculture in their state. And it puts it all at the federal level. Like, let's be real, that's not good. But the cool thing is, we know that pressure makes them change things, at least when it comes to agriculture. So I'm going to do something that I rarely do, which is tell you to contact your congressman. I know I reached out to mine. So do me a favor and tag your representative in the comments.
All right, everybody. So that's Joe Redden. He is the older millennial on every single platform and somebody that's very, very openly on the right, right? This is an issue that is bringing farmers together. It's really pushing together the agricultural and Midland of the United States to fight for this, but people don't really know what it is. The Save Our Bacon Act is very similar to what you guys have been helping me fight for in pesticide immunity with each of my visits to the show, right? What you're seeing is two international monopolies, right, that have come together and written a bill that they handed some Congress people, the people that they've already donated tons of money to. We're talking about the owners of Smithfield, which we always knew is an American company, but was actually acquired by a Chinese conglomerate just about a decade ago. And they have a monopoly on pork production in the United States. They literally control more than 80% of it. They've put out over 200,000 meat distributors, and packers in the United States have gone out of business because of their conduct. And we have married with that JBS, which is a Brazilian monopoly on the beef industry. And these two companies got together, wrote a bill, slapped a fancy name on it called the Save Our Bacon Act. And then they said, everybody should want this. Well, Harvard did a study and they looked at what the Save Our Bacon Act actually does. And what it does is it creates a massive power grab by the federal government to steal power away from the states to individually regulate agriculture. What we're talking about is the literal destruction of 1,000 laws that have been passed by states in the United States, from Tennessee to Arkansas to Kentucky and everywhere in between, where citizens have gotten together and said, hey, either maybe we don't want a bunch of hormones in our food, or perhaps we want animals to have regular welfare checks, or perhaps we want farmers to have the ability to package meat locally in our region of the country. And what it does is it takes all of the control of states and allows it to be pulled to the federal government, negating more than 1,000 state laws. Now, the one that they keep dragging out and telling everybody this is really about is something called Prop 12 in California. And they say, you know, they're going to California America if we don't do this, if we don't pass this bill. Well, Prop 12 in California wasn't passed by the legislature. It was written by the voters and passed by the voters. And what it did was it effectively ended the need for excessive hormones and antibiotics in animals before they go to slaughter, because it was allowing them to stand up and move around so that they didn't have to treat bed sores on the animals, right? So Prop 12 was upheld twice at the Supreme Court, but that is one bill that they're holding out. Most of the bills this would actually negate come from all of the Midland states where the agriculture is most prevalent. Again, heavy on Tennessee, on Kentucky, on Arkansas, on Oklahoma and Texas. And as a show that's really like had a longstanding perspective of supporting states' rights, this bill is poison. And we know it's poison because the chair of the Agricultural Committee said he's not including it in the text of the farm bill for the Senate. He said he called it a poison pill and said he would not include it. The problem is that Joni Ernst, she's a congresswoman that is retiring this year and has a lot of special job offers and has taken a ton of money from these monopolies. And she says she's going to put it in through amendment. And we thought she had the votes. She still may have the votes.
But now that the people have become aware that this was being put in, there has been some outcry, and we need more of it. We need to stop it. Because as of 2 days ago, we were still very, very sure that this was going to pass in the Senate bill, right? And Rep. Luna worked very hard in the House to try to pull it out. She did a great job. We have to finish it now in the Senate. So for everybody out there that's watching at home, you actually have something you can do on this one. You can start calling your senators. You can call your senators and you can say, I don't want this in the farm bill. This doesn't belong in the farm bill. I believe in states' rights. There's a really great creator named Hunter Howell who called this the F Your States' Rights Act. He said it's nothing to do with bacon, right? It's the steady erosion of our states' rights. And he's right. What we're watching right now are international companies buying American federal politicians to try to grab power from the states, consolidate it into the federal government where they have absolute control over the regulatory agencies because of the money they spent. And they want to make sure that American citizens don't have a right to say, I don't want poison in my food. I don't want chemicals in my food. I don't want antibiotics in my food. You know, something that was brought to my attention earlier today is that Brazil allows mRNA and vaccines that have mRNA in all of their beef production. They are the authors of this bill, right? It's a Brazilian monopoly of meat producers and meat packagers that are the authors of this bill with the Chinese Smithfield owners, right? This is not something that we want. This is not something we should be willing to accept. This is something that we should care about. And when you're looking at it from the outside in, farmers all across America are rising up. They're talking about it. This has a heavy impact on our food supply. And it also really transitions to what Thomas Massey's been fighting for, because this is a big issue for him, right? Right now, we know in the House Farm Bill, he included the Prime Act. If you're not familiar with the Prime Act is a bill that Thomas Massey had been fighting to pass for 5 consecutive years. The Prime Act allows local farmers to butcher their own meat and distribute it regionally at local meat packers. They don't have to go to these massive conglomerates. This bill would negate that as well. This bill would wrest that power away so that those small producers could not afford to continue to operate. And with the Prime Act, we get locally grown, locally produced, locally slaughtered, and locally packaged meat, which is in a staunch juxtaposition to what we're currently seeing in the United States, which a lot of people don't recognize. Most people think that if it says raised and packaged in the United States, that means that is USA meat. Well, that's because there are a lot of loopholes that allow them to say if it was raised here and then slaughtered and quickly thrown in a container ship where it spent 2 months traveling across the ocean to China to be broken down, butchered, and then repackaged, then it gets put on a ship coming 2 months back across the way, loaded with methane to keep the meat looking pink. Right. And then it gets packaged in a small facility here and distributed. That says raised and packaged in the United States. And they leave out the 4 months that it was traveling back and forth overseas, loaded with chemicals to keep it looking like it was still fresh meat. We want local produce. We want local control. We want state level control. And we want voters to have a say. And for every single bit that the federal government is able to wrest away from the states, it's much, much harder for Americans to actually have a say. We have much more control and much more effective ability to push back at the state level. So for everybody watching this broadcast today, that's what I'm going to ask every single one of you to do. You're going to go to call your senator. If you don't know how to do that, at any one of my social channels, it's the top link in my bio where you can find your senator. Whorepresentsme.org, I think, also has that for you. And what you're going to do is you're going to say, I do not support including SOBA or the Save Our Bacon Act in the Farm Bill in the Senate or the House. It's as simple as that. This doesn't have to be hard. It doesn't have to be difficult. We get to give ourselves healthy food, and we can circumvent these monopolies that are controlling our legislatures, but also controlling our executive and overall controlling the regulatory agencies that want this control from us. Now, as much as I would love to talk about bacon all day and the Prime Act, because they are some of my favorite topics, I want to pivot to something that is just a little more interesting maybe, which is ice cream. Because yesterday was the first day of summer, day before yesterday was the first day of summer. And one of the biggest articles that sort of went viral today online was talking about the rise of the $8 ice cream cone. Can you guys get me an image of that? I sent it over this morning. It says the rise of the $8 ice cream cone. And it's because there were two viral videos that went very, very viral where a girl went to an ice cream truck and was trying to get two ice creams, and it was going to cost roughly $12 for two ice creams. And she lost her mind and said, who would pay this? Nobody would pay this. Well, actually, if you look at what's happening in the United States right now, everyone is paying that. Now, what's happening is in all of the business articles, they're saying this is a huge problem related to supply chain shocks and rampant inflation and the cost of goods. And there's a little bit of truth to that, perhaps just a tiny bit of truth to that, right? When you look at COVID, we had some pretty serious supply chain shocks. Since then, we've had a heck of a lot of dairy produced in the United States. And because of tariffs, a lot of it stayed here. So I don't think it was a risk of not having the access to dairy here in the U.S. But we are having some problems right now due to the war in Iran, where the Strait of Hormuz closed all of the fertilizer, which is how we grow the food that feeds the cattle and feeds the dairy cows, right? But what they're not saying in this article is really what matters. And that's that, yes, we've had some inflation, we've had some supply chain issues, but what we've actually had is rampant monopolization. We've had rampant monopolization and private equity acquisition in the dairy markets and in specifically the ice cream market. And so what we've seen is the loss of more than 100,000 small mom and pop ice cream shops over the last 10 years. And we've seen companies that are acquiring huge swaths of the ice cream shops in the U.S., rolling them up under private equity roll-ups. Now, we talk a lot about our homes, right? We talk a lot about nursing care facilities. We've talked an awful lot, right, about private equity acquiring the plumbers and the roofers and the HVAC technicians. But can't we just have ice cream? Wouldn't you think we could just have ice cream? Well, the answer is no. We cannot have ice cream. And that's because you have brands like Kahala that acquired all of the Cold Stone brands, right? Rolled it up. Governor Doug Ducey from Arizona put a bunch of shock pricing in there, sued a bunch of their small mom and pop competitors, and then forced pricing through where now you go to Cold Stone and it's a $12.50 cup of ice cream. Quite literally, $12.50. I know I tried to go 3 weeks ago so I could take a look at the pricing, right? And we're seeing right now that we have several brands that had held out for a while, that had not sold out to private equity, that are now on the precipice of selling out, and we're seeing it in real time. And if you look at how many mom and pop shops we've lost in the United States, how much ice cream we've lost in the United States and how it's been rolled up, the ice cream that you know and love, and I'm going to age myself right now. I grew up going to Thrifty and getting 35-cent ice cream cones. I'm not that old. That was actually a common thing at Thrifty ice cream throughout all of the 90s and 2000s. It went up to 99-cent ice cream cones. And then private equity actually bankrupted all of the pharmacies that they were in. And so Thrifty ice cream disappeared. That was actually private equity destruction too. Right. So today what we're seeing is the rise of the $8 ice cream cone. And it begs the question, how long are we going to continue to allow things that should not cost what they're costing to cost us more than is reasonable, more than is market competitive, and is in fact just an arbitrary number being set by cartels that get together, work together, and fix prices in the United States? And it would be easy to say, you know, we could just buy ice cream and take it home. I hate to say it, but a quart of ice cream right now, if you go to buy Tillamook, which is a co-op here in the United States, it's $8.99 for a quart of Tillamook right now, right? The ice cream that's still affordable in the grocery store is no longer ice cream. If you go to the grocery store right now, you're going to see it called frozen dairy dessert. And that's because it no longer has the butter fat necessary to legally be called ice cream. That is a regulated term in the United States. And so brands like Turkey Hill and Blue Bunny have been adding oils to supplement in favor of butter. And because they can no longer call them ice cream in tiny little letters at the bottom of a package, it will say frozen dairy dessert. It is no longer ice cream. So to get ice cream, a lot of times you do have to go to a shop or you have to find the right container at your store. And going to those shops has become increasingly expensive, right? And I think I would be okay paying for $8 for ice cream if it was locally raised and the farmers were making the ice cream. And I do that, right? I do. I go to a place called South Mountain Creamery, where I live, and Rocky Point Creamery, where I live in Western Maryland. And both of those are house-made ice creams, and there I'm paying about $5. It's only when I cross over to the private equity-owned brands that I'm seeing an $8.50 cone of ice cream for my kids. And you wonder how many things at this point are just going to be taken out of reach and what we can do about it. The answer is, I don't know how much we can do. But we're going to talk about a few solutions for your family when we come back in just a few seconds after the break. Again, my name is Tiffany Cianci. I am here for Harrison Smith. They're in expectedly today. And you can follow me at The Vino Mom at Tiffany Cianci online. We'll be back right after this break. Thanks so much.
Inflation is up. That's an issue. So how does Berkshire handle that with its business?
Well, we can't handle runaway inflation except not to be there in the way of it. If you look at the number of countries that have had runaway inflation since World War II, you know, in my lifetime, it's very large. Once you create that, it becomes a different world. And of course, you have countries that gone bankrupt like six or seven times. I mean, it's just amazing what people do. not having faith in the money does to a country. It turns it into something else.
Dollar collapse means we keep continuing on where we are. Dollar devalues. We've got massive inflation. You raise interest rates to slow that inflation down. So this is going to have a cataclysmic effect on the insurance industry, on pension funds, on everything. And on the
banking system. And let's be clear, though, a dollar being the world currency is how we could just print it and buy whatever we wanted. If the world sees it like the Mexican peso or worse, we're screwed. So here's Prince Charles, the king, announcing the digital chains, the mark of the beast system, and a dovetail with Tony Blair, who's globally, through the UN and Bill Gates, standardized the world ID that the UK, under orders of the king, I thought he's just ceremonial, no, he could dissolve parliament anytime he wants, is now going into place. This all ties into everything. We'll talk to the top economist and great patriot, Dr. Kirk Kelly, in a moment about it, but here's the clips.
My ministers will also proceed with the introduction of digital ID that will modernize how citizens interact with public services.
Tell us a bit about what it means for what government should do in terms of its digital infrastructure, digital ID, data centers, and so on.
The first thing a country needs to do is to unify all of their data so it can be consumed and used by the AI model. You have to take all of your healthcare data, your diagnostic data, your electronic health records, your genomic data. We have to take all of this data we have in our country and move it into a single, if you will, unified data platform.
What they do is Oracle make big donations to Tony Blair's Institute, and Tony Blair's Institute advocates for further advantages for Oracle and Oracle-affiliated entities. Listen, the centralization of data and the centralization of power is part of a dark and nefarious agenda.
People are really crazy if they don't call you. You're on record the biggest company because you have the best ratings, the best gold and silver prices. It is the smart move. Get a free consultation. They can roll over financial instruments.
This should be a happy time, right? So don't let the news scare you, but rather use the wisdom, the creativity that God gave you. Go into tangible assets that have zero counterparty risk. Silver was up over 140% last year. Since January 30th, when it corrected and it had a 50% correction, went down into the 60s, it's almost 90. Literally, since February, silver's up over 30%, Alex. There is a path to safety here financially, and that's what tangible assets do. This is what
God
the numbers
always
are
gives
telling
his
us.
People a way out, but the people perish always. For lack of knowledge.
Always. He always does. He's never going to say something, even if it's the mark of the beast. When he talks about it in Revelation, he's not going to say something unless we have a choice to either accept or reject, because he didn't create robots.
KEPM.com/gold. Sign up for the email there to get a free consultation. We'll call you right back. Or you can call the number 720-605-3000. The smartest investment you could have made in the last 3 years. I'm telling you right now, this is the place to go. 720-605-3000.
Weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
And welcome back, everybody, to War Room Live. I am Tiffany Cianci, and I am filling in today for Harrison Smith. It's always a pleasure to be in studio, but today I'm filming virtually. Actually from Texas. So thank you guys for having me on. Thank you guys for letting me, for indulging me in filling in for Harrison, because I know he is much beloved. Just before the break, we were talking about the fact that ice cream, summer favorite, right? A staple, all the kids are out of school, has gone up in price to what many of us considered an impossible number just a few years ago. And when you go out and you're trying to treat your kids, it probably feels like the wallet is pinching. The wallet's not just pinching. Prices have doubled over the last 6 years for an ice cream cone in the United States, with the average in the United States now for a name brand ice cream cone around $8. $8. Now, I have three children. Just a few years ago, I could take my kids for kids' cones, and they were $1.50 each.
But what we've seen is this consummate strategy of Kahala Brands, Rourke Capital. We've seen a flurry of big private equity firms rolling up ice cream shops and consolidating the pricing structure, working together like a cartel that they are, and the FTC refusing to step in and regulate these fixed priced schemes. And we're seeing the fixed price schemes happening more and more because our FTC right now is missing several of its chair people. And without the chair people, right, without the chairs of the FTC, we don't have enough lawyers to do anything. And so they're not enforcing any trust laws. And that means that private equity can do what private equity always does, which is exploit the American people. And that means your wallet. So this summer, I'm going to challenge all of you. There are a few things you can do, right, to try and make it a little better for yourselves. If you're in a part of the country that has agriculture, there are several states in the U.S. that actually have ice cream like tours you can find through your local dairy alliances, where you can find farms that are still making fresh ice cream and serving them up. Again, my favorite places in Maryland are Rocky Point Creamery and Rocky Mountain Creamery. Those are like two of them. That's in Maryland, but you can get those in Virginia. You can get them in Maryland. You can get it in Pennsylvania. You can even get it in West Virginia. Nightingale is a local family-owned producer of ice cream that distributes in about 50% of the United States. That has amazing ice cream sandwiches that are exactly the same in their stores as they are in the grocery stores where you can get them, and they're about $4, right? You also have the option of going to family-owned brands like Jenny Splendid. Now, Jenny Splendid has not sold out to private equity. They are still owned by Jenny. She is still distributing in most of the United States. And at least if you're giving your money, you're giving it to cows that are happy and farmers that are making the money that they're actually supposed to for their dairy, instead of these private equity owned brands that are literally just just pinching and twisting the knife for your families at a time where they know families are craving this and kids are asking for this and they're at home and parents are probably going to give in. You can make better choices for your family. You can make better choices for your community, and you can support small businesses and farmers in your community if you're given the option. And you can also go to your stores and support co-ops, right? What we're seeing right now, as I mentioned before the break, is that most ice cream in the United States is not ice cream anymore. It's now called frozen dairy dessert because it doesn't have the butter fat necessary to be required, like to be legally required to be called ice cream. And so instead, what you're going to see is frozen dairy dessert in teeny tiny letters at the bottom of the label on places like Blue Bunny and Turkey Hill. Well, if you look at ice cream, there are some co-ops that are releasing ice cream. Tillamook is the most famous. That is a cooperative of farmers from all across the Western United States where the farmers actually make the money from that ice cream. So if you're going to pay more for a premium product, I'd rather it was going to the farmers. You can make that choice too for your home and your family and get a little bit more for your money. Now we're going to pivot to something that is a little more black pill oriented. I know we had some solutions here, but we're going to turn our attention to a video by Larry Fink, the founder of BlackRock, who has just told all of us that we don't have to worry about the SpaceX IPO or Anthropic or OpenAI, because they're not going to be paying for all these data centers they owe $3 trillion to build out right now. Nay, nay, it's going to be your retirement account and your 401k that build it out. And he's going to fill us in right now. I think.
Two foreign monopolies are buying American politicians to control America.
So have you guys heard about like the Save Our Bacon Act, right? And the Farm Bill? Seen some videos talking about it, but honestly, I hadn't dug into it. And I had somebody reach out and actually explain it to me. And it is really, really bad. The Save Our Bacon Act, right? This actually passed the House already as part of the Farm Bill. It would basically override all state animal safety and food safety laws, as well as consumer protection laws. Harvard Law looked into this and they identified up to 1,000 different state laws that could be wiped out. It preempts state laws and goes to only the federal law, which
is all right, everybody, they're working on some technical difficulties. Again, I was not supposed to be hosting. I was supposed to be a guest today and I am filling in. So I apologize. The green room, I'm sure, is fixing that. I'm going to give you a little like precursor to what's going on. So right now, a lot of you have seen big news about the SpaceX IPO. Everyone's talking about SpaceX getting a $2.5 trillion valuation. They were seeking a $1.7 trillion valuation. And everybody's asking, like, is it worth it? Should I get in? Do I want to miss out on this? SpaceX fell 10% yesterday, by the way, right? So that should tell you a little something. But what we do know about SpaceX, we know about Anthropic, what we know about OpenAI are all racing to IPO. And each one of them is seeking a $1 to $2 trillion valuation. These are the highest valuations in American history ever awarded to anybody going to IPO. And a lot of people think it's just a random number. Does their earnings potential actually justify it? The answer is no. Their earnings potential absolutely does not justify it. When you look at SpaceX, for instance, what you're going to see is a company that made all of $18 billion last year.
and lost $4.9 billion. They spent $4.9 billion more than the $18 billion they collected. They've never made a dollar. They have never generated a profit or a return for anybody. And they got awarded a $1.75 trillion IPO. Why? What do they have on the horizon that's guaranteeing they're going to make that? Well, SpaceX is leaning very, very heavily on government contracts. They say, we're going to be the ones taking people back and forth to space. We have that guarantee. We'll make money eventually. Trust me, bro. And the reality is that this has everything to do with one of the other issues that I've been talking about on this show every time I come on, which is how your 401ks are about to be rated by the largest corporations, private equity companies, and private credit firms in the United States. And these IPOs are central to that strip mining, that rating. And what we're going to see right now is that these IPOs are being given high valuations at a time when President Trump issued an executive order called the Democratizing Access to Alternative Investments Order in October. I think it was October 16th of last year, roughly thereabouts, where he said that he was going to give regular everyday Americans access to the alternative investment mechanisms and the big billionaire strategies that billionaires were using already. And we should all be very, very grateful. At the very bottom of that letter, he said he was calling on the SEC and the Department of Labor to make that possible for all of us. Well, we've talked a lot about the Department of Labor. You guys have helped me to put comments in to stop the Department of Labor from giving immunity to fund managers to badly invest your money in private equity. But on the flip side of that exact same executive order, we have what we're looking at right now, which is the SEC passed a new rule like May 26th. And that new rule makes it so if you are given a trillion plus valuation at your IPO, you are given immediate access to the index funds. Now, what does that mean? For some of you, it might not mean anything. You might never have heard that before. For anybody that has a 401k, there is a chance that index funds have a heck of a lot to do with your future. Okay. If you're investing money, those index funds are very, very important to you. And statistically and historically, index funds post 2001, your company, once taken to IPO, had to prove for 12 consecutive months that it could generate returns for their investors before they could be included in index funds. Why? Because index funds are designed to alleviate risk. It's to make sure that if you give $100 to your 401k, that it's spread across the 99 companies. So if any one of those companies tanks, the rest of it is floated up to hold your investments in a safe way. Right now, we've had two consecutive years where all of the gains made by the stock market, all of them, literally every penny, were tied up in data centers and these three companies and the Magnificent Seven. After these three IPOs, they'll be called the Magnificent 10. And as a result, having them go straight to index fund would force every investor in America that has a 401k or an investment account that is managed, even an insurance that's an annuity, right? They're going to be automatically forced to buy these IPOs. Why? Because post-dot-com bubble in 1999, hundreds of thousands of Americans lost their retirements. They lost their retirements because companies in the dot-com bubble were allowed access into the index funds. And when the dot-com bubble burst, all of those index funds lost everything and people lost their entire investment accounts. Pensions lost all of their investments. Investments through insurance companies and hedge funds lost major investments through indexes. These are meant to be moderate to low risk. They're not meant to be high risk. And so for the last 25 years, anytime a company wanted to be included in those index funds, which everyone is required to purchase, right? You're not required, but if you're in a fund that is managed in a way that is designed for a target end date, it is automatically invested in these index funds, like the Vanguard Fund. Okay, Vanguard has two flagship investment index funds. And there's a very good chance your retirement is in those funds. Well, for the last 25 years, to be included in that fund as an investment, you had to prove for 12 months you could return a return, a dividend to your investors for 12 consecutive months. And then you could apply for access to the index funds. Well, in that same executive order that Trump wrote back in October, what he ended up doing was he said, I'm calling on the SEC and the Department of Labor. And the SEC did exactly what he asked for. The SEC passed a new rule in May that says when you get a high valuation, Not only do you get immediate access to the index funds, but they're also changing the rules that require proof of what's called a public float minimum to access those index funds, because that was also passed after the dot-com bubble. Now, if you don't know what a public float is, that means that there is enough of your stock available to the public to buy that your insider investors couldn't artificially manipulate the fund, okay? And what they did here was they actually gave a break on that too. And they reduced it from like a 13% minimum available to the public to 5%, which means that these companies can literally come in, get this high valuation they do not deserve because they do not have a profitability strategy that makes any sense for these valuations. They can force your 401k to immediately start buying in an index fund, and they only have to make 5% available to the public to buy, which means they could have pre-sold 95% of the stock at discount prices to their billionaire insiders that are now going to sell at the top where you're buying. Now, statistically, when you buy at an IPO, you're going to see 17 to 21% losses over the next year and a half. That is statistically true over the last 15 years. So for all of us being forced through our index funds to buy into this IPO, this SpaceX IPO, there is a very high likelihood we will lose 20% of that investment over the next year and a half. Now imagine that every retirement account in the United States has to buy it, right? And we're just pushing that stock up by artificially being forced into that purchase. And suddenly there's a ton of money and value available to borrow against to build these data centers. And that is why Larry Fink came out and very boldly, with no qualms at all, said it's really worried about these investments because these companies aren't actually going to pay for these data centers. The everyday Americans are. They're going to pay for these data centers, the data centers they don't want, the data centers that they're picketing outside the meetings of, the data centers that are launching referendums all across the United States. The American people are going to pay for these data centers. That's what's going to happen. I'm going to ask real quick, do we have that video available? If we do, could you play it? And if not, oh, there it is.
Americans to think about growing with the United States. We will have far than enough money to invest in this infrastructure. But as the governor was talking about, the need for electrons is growing every day. Some of these, you know, if we're going to be the leader in technology, which we are, if we are going to be the leader in AI, which we presently are, it's just going to require trillions of dollars of investments. And if we don't invest in it, China will be the global leader in this. And so to me, it's not whether. This is a must. And if you think about how that translates, it translates into a more dynamic economy. We need the United States economy to grow at over 2%. We need the U.S. economy to grow at 3%, especially with the growing deficits the federal government has. And so much of this money, not just the project, is going to be coming from the private sector, from savings accounts, from pension accounts, from insurance companies, and on and on and on. The whole world is in need of improving the infrastructure.
You know, he goes on to say, and the whole world's in need of improving the infrastructure. Infrastructure is good for the economy. And we don't really have any concerns about these investments because these investments aren't going to be paying for what they're actually obligated to, the American people will. And, you know, when the billionaires say the quiet part out loud, you should listen. You should always listen to them. And so we've seen with SpaceX right now, the very first glimpse of what's about to happen. But next to IPO are Anthropic and OpenAI. OpenAI, they're seeking a $2.5 trillion IPO, as is Anthropic. Their entire business model at this point is war, right? The only thing that they have to offer right now is that we're going to get government contracts. So you can trust me, bro, we'll make money eventually. But when you look at the value of these companies, when you look at what this means, right? When you look at the valuations, Anthropic right now is selling a service for $100 a month to the American people. A lot of businesses are doing it. A lot of people are doing it. You rent access to their LLMs. And so you get access to Claude Code, whatever you're using, right? You get access to. And in doing so, you are getting $16,000 worth of compute. That's the average you can spend $100 with Anthropic right now to get is $16,000 worth of compute because they need us addicted. They're getting us addicted to using it. And then at a certain point, all of those subsidies have to turn off and we're going to start paying for those tokens. And when we do, I don't think the American people are going to keep paying $100 a month for the amount of compute they're actually going to get. And they're certainly not going to be paying $16,000 a month for the true value of that compute, right? So what we're seeing here is this fictitious, candy-coated, artificial world that is being built for us by these AI companies that want us addicted, want us needed. And Sam Altman came out and said the quiet part out loud. He said, and I'm going to roughly quote here, "I see the future of intelligence as a service that you rent access to, like a utility, where we turn on the meter. And if you want access to intelligence, you rent it from us. We run the meter, and that's how we make our money." They need us docile, uneducated, ignorant, right? They need our children uneducated so that we have to rent access to the intelligence they stole, right? These companies stole the intelligence. They scraped copyrights that belong to other people, right? They stole books that were written that had licensing that they never paid for. They stole magazines, movies, Disney characters, and they train these models on stolen intellectual property and our intelligence, which is what makes our data so valuable. We have some of the most valuable thing on earth right now is data, right? It's worth more than minerals. It's worth more than blood. It's worth more than printer ink, if you can believe it, right? And so we have these tech bros that are desperately racing to IPO, one, because it's becoming clear that they don't have a profit model, right? OpenAI had made a movie generator. They said everybody was going to pay for access to it. Flopped in under 6 months, and Sora has now been shuttered. The app is no longer available. You can't use it anymore, right? And now they're saying, well, don't worry, we'll get government contracts. Well, the only way that that works is if these billionaires keep us at war forever. We were promised no new forever wars. That has certainly gotten farther out of reach for all of us. We all know that through the war in Iran. We've seen how it's impacting everything. But if their profit model is war and we don't want war, then why would we think it's a safe investment to invest in a company where that's the only profit opportunity they have right now? Right? If you look around the world, and a lot of people don't like when I use China as an example, but they're the closest competitor we have in AI. So I'm going to use China as an example real quick. China is not allowing 3 to 4 companies to dominate their AI development. They're not. Instead, what they've done is turned up to every developer in China, hundreds of thousands of them, and they have them all competing to make the best products through open source competition, which is what competition is designed to do, by the way, right? And they assume that when there are good products that are established, that cream will rise to the top, and that is what will be elevated in their economy. Now, if you juxtapose that with us, we have 4 tech billionaires that have said, give us all your data, and we promise one of us will come up with the golden goose. One of us will come up with the thing that's valuable. We don't know which one, and we can't promise how it's going to happen. And we don't know what it's going to look like. But one of us will figure it out. Again, trust me, bro. And by the way, we need 6,000 data centers to do it. That's a little bit of an exaggeration. We're currently building 5,581 in the United States. All of them unnecessary unless you were surveilling every American 24/7 around the clock, right? That's what you would need that much data center capacity for. These are highly speculative. They don't have customers for them. They're buying up water rights and land rights. And I think that's really important to say, right? They're saying this is for data centers we have to have. Well, the whole of China, which actually has the infrastructure grid to support it without building all new power lines like we're having to do, they only have 550. That's all they're building, 550. Why do we need 10 times as many data centers? No one can really answer that question. And the more that I look into it, the more I think it's about the water and the land. I really do, right? We could not use that much capacity given every prediction model that we have available. But we do have a bunch of real estate speculators that are out here trying to gobble up as much land and water as possible. We do see that in real time with no way to pay for it because every data center is being put on a 20 to 30 year payback in the way that they're discussing it in their profit and loss statements. But every single chip in that data center has to be replaced every 2 to 3 years. No one's even talking about those costs. That's not even being factored in yet, right? So we're talking about why these IPOs are destined to be really painful and how they're going to use them to leverage our 401ks. Well, Anthropic is next and OpenAI. And right now, OpenAI has just had to scale back all of their predictions for what they were going to do with curing cancer and taking over schools. All of that's changed now. And they say AI is not going to replace jobs anymore. They have to say that. Why do they have to say that? Because if we don't have jobs, we can't buy their product, right? Someone went to an Econ 101 class and figured that out in the last few weeks. So they've changed their dialogue on that issue. But Simultaneously, they're seeking an IPO because they are committed to trillions of dollars in data centers that they have agreed to buy that they have no way to pay for. And an IPO will get them access to our money. Now, how much money do they need? Well, private equity needs $12 trillion. The data centers need about $3 trillion. Quick, ask me how much money is available in the 401k market right now. $14.8 trillion. Thank you for asking. So we know $12 trillion is needed by private equity and private credit. We need about $3 trillion available for the data centers. And we have $14.8 trillion available in the 401k market. What could go wrong? What could possibly go wrong? And so as you guys are thinking about whether or not you want to buy, right? I can't give you investment advice. I can't do that. But as you're thinking about it, I want you to understand that there is a strategy here that required an executive order from the president that was paid for by the crypto and private equity lobby and by the AI lobbies. They fought hard for these executive orders, right? They donated hundreds of millions of dollars over the last election cycles and a whole bunch of money to a ballroom, right? To get these executive orders written. And now that they're written, we have two agencies that are changing every rule that was meant to protect every working class American that has existed for the last 25 years, since the last time the working class Americans were the cost of diversifying and socializing the risk of reckless corporate greed. And they've just turned off the switches that were put in place to protect us for no reason at all, except that they were asked to by billionaires because they always share the wealth, right? And now we have data centers that none of us want, that are not necessary, that we do not need, that are not the future of compute, by the way. And for those of you that don't know, I actually have a day job. I work in AI. I know a heck of a lot about this topic. They are not necessary, right? These are not necessary. The future of AI is going to be decentralized. And so is the future of compute. And that's why every other country in the world is not building 6,000 data centers. That's just us, right? But it's also the only thing propping up our stock market. The data center buildouts, if you look at their GDP spend and the GDP growth we've had over the last 2 years, they're almost identical. 3.8%, 3.8%. Every dollar spent on data centers and build out in AI is dollar for dollar exactly our GDP growth. Otherwise, we'd have a net negative, which has not happened in decades, right? So what can you guys do? Well, let's talk about it. You guys, if you were trying to find a way to not buy these index funds that these IPOs are going to be forced into, you could call your fund manager at your 401k because you can self-manage and self-direct and tell them that until these IPOs have settled, you want your money pulled back from new investment in these index funds. You could say that, right? You can absolutely call your fund manager and give them specific companies you're not allowing. Because these companies are the exact same companies. These index funds are the exact same funds that right now are cutting off billionaires from withdrawing their money because the bottom is falling out in their private credit markets, right? You can protect yourself. You don't have to give your money to bail out these billionaires. You do not have to forfeit your 401ks, but you do have to take action. You do have to take part. You do have to speak out. And you also should be contacting, in my opinion, your state attorney generals to protect you because the federal government is not protecting anyone on this issue right now. State attorney generals, they might be able to help. So that's another way that you can try and take part, another way that you can try and make a difference. But you need to contact your fund managers. You need to explain to them your concerns. You need to say, I do not give you permission to invest in private equity. I do not give you permission to invest in alternative investments and private credit. I absolutely do not give you permission to invest my money in these early IPOs. I need them to settle. Now, for those of you that tuned in and wondered where Harrison is, he was out very unexpectedly sick in the last hour today. I am filling in on very short notice for all of you that tolerated me being here instead of him. Thank you so much. If you'd like to follow me, you can follow me at Tiffany Cianci on TikTok and YouTube and at The Vino Mom on X and Instagram. Don't forget to call your senators and say no to SOBA. Have a great day, everyone.
Hi, folks. Doc Bigley here. And today we're going to get to know our H2O. Billy, what kind of water do you drink?
Why, tap water, of course. Ma says it keeps my teeth sparkly white.
I'm sorry to say it, Billy, but your mother is either plain ignorant or worse, a communist. Let me explain.
Tap water used to be safe to drink, but communist subversives in our government introduced fluoride into our nation's tap under the guise of dental health, when in reality, fluoride lowers your IQ, calcifies your pineal gland, and makes you susceptible to anti-capitalist mind viruses.
So you're telling me I'm a sap if I drink tap?
Yes, you are, Billy. Yes, you are.
But don't despair. We found a solution. Follow me. I'd like to tell you a tale of two frogs.
Frog number one has only ever drank unfiltered tap water, chock full of fluoride. Observe him listening to satanic music, abusing substances, and engaging in other perversions.
Look, Doc, they're trying to play leapfrog. They're pretty bad at it, though.
Avert your eyes, Billy. Let's continue.
Meanwhile, frog number two has only ever drank water that has been filtered for fluoride and other impurities. What a happy frog family.
Spill the secret, Doc. How do you get rid of the communist poisons?
With the new water filter system from the AlexJonesStore.com.
Say, Doc, may I have a glass?
Why, certainly. Well, that's just swell. No water in the water filter. Listen, I'm not mad at the crew, but I asked for real water in here 30 minutes ago and never got it.
Crew's in trouble again.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.